You're listening to Culture Narrow Chat, the only weekly English language podcast on Atletico Madrid and a part of Into the Calderon, the SB Nation home for all things Atletico. I'm Jeremy Barron, two guests on this edition of the program, Into the Calderon staff writer Rob Walker and Into the Calderon Atletico Feminas correspondent Gianluca Lea. Rob stops by to talk about Atletico's win over Sevilla on Sunday, a convincing, comprehensive victory with more Antoine Griezmann fireworks. Is the race for third place back on? After that, Gianluca joins for a discussion on Atletico's women's team, which is unbeaten, top of the league, and challenging for a first league title since 1990. It's all coming up and more after this. Yeah, lots to talk about. Let's start, as ever, though, with the La Liga whip around.
All right.
On Friday, Las Palmas 1, Villarreal 0. Kevin Prince with a great goal, the only one of the game. Villarreal were down to 10 men for more than 70 minutes. Weren't always totally out of it, though, but could not get the win or even a draw. On Saturday, Eibar and Espanyol playing out a 1-1 draw. Eibar have not won in four, just one win in the last six, as their hopes of making Europa League are pretty distant at this point. Athletic 1, Real Madrid 2. Real Madrid don't play well, but they win anyway. So is life. Alaves 1, Real Sociedad 0 in the mini-Basque derby. That's a big result for both those teams, plus Atletico, as we'll discuss. Real Betis 2, Osasuna 0. By the way, Teo Hernandez assisted on Alaves' goal. He's going to be such a beast.
Yeah, he's been excellent all season long.
He's awesome. Real Betis beat Osasuna 2-0. Osasuna are still dreadful. Their 19th loss in 28 games. They are most certainly down. On Sunday, big day. Leganes and Malaga playing out a goalless draw in one of the worst games you'll watch this season.
Yep, both those teams are not very fun to watch.
No, it was awful. That wasn't football. Sporting Gijón 3, Granada 1. Sporting down 1-0, but score three times in 6 minutes after the hour to put this one away. Granada are in—they're in trouble now. 7 points adrift of safety. Deportivo 0, Celta Vigo 1. Iago Aspas settling the Galician derby, and Barcelona 4, Valencia 2. The Mangala experience.
Oh, it was glorious. Has it ever been any better? It was a sight to behold.
It was the complete Elkin Mangala experience wrapped into about 15 minutes. The goal, the two quick yellow cards, the penalty. Oh,
absolutely glorious.
It was.
I mean, it was like watching a finely tuned orchestra.
You have some sick tastes.
Oh yes. Oh yes. So, I would say cultured, but
I would not. one man's trash is another man's gold. So, we look at the table now. Real Madrid are top with 65 points through 27 weeks. Barcelona in second with 63 points through 28 weeks. Of course, Madrid have the game in hand. Sevilla in third on 57 points. Atletico on 55. Villarreal and Sociedad both on 48. Now, the one result we didn't get to. Atletico Madrid 3, Sevilla 1. Rob, congratulations. You got the scoreline right.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, come on. You got to have some positivity in these predictions now.
You
predicting a 1-1 draw, I think.
I picked 1-1 with a late, very late, disgusting goal.
It could have happened. It was actually truly a really fun game to watch. I know some people didn't think that I saw on Twitter, but I quite enjoyed it myself.
Atletico played extremely well. They came out on fire. Tremendous energy, tremendous enthusiasm and intensity. Simeone, I think, has truly recovered his Atletico. And I know the same caveat that we've talked about, take these league games in a vacuum, fine. But Atleti, I think this is as long a run, as sustained a run as they've been on all season. I mean, you'd have to go back to September and October to see an Atleti this good. They were great on Sunday.
Yeah, it's really true. As we've talked about many times, there have been several times that where we thought that they had turned a corner, and they in fact had not. But at this point, they haven't put together results quite like they have of late. So to see this sort of these performances, not only just the results, because the loss at Barcelona was sort of the catalyst for it. So it's been great, really.
I think the worst thing for Sevilla was to play Atletico right after Leicester, because the two teams set up very similarly, have similar philosophies, counterattacking philosophies. This was probably the opponent Sevilla did not want to see. We kind of talked about that previewing the game, but it really rang true. Sevilla had more than 60% possession and did little with it. Just two shots on target the entire game. One of them was Joaquin Correa's consolation goal 5 minutes from time. Just dominant.
Yeah, in the first half, the only thing that Oblak had to do was try to get, Ben Yedder to take a dive.
Yeah.
Which was pretty sad.
Yeah, that was a top drive. I top dive. I gave it probably an 8 or a 9 out of 10. That was very well done.
Honestly, you know, given the state of a lot of La Liga refs, I'm a little bit surprised it wasn't called.
Frankly. Oh, I was expecting it. It was very clearly not a penalty, but, you know.
Yeah, he didn't touch him at all.
Not everything was great from this game, though, as Shime Vrsaljko had to leave in just the second minute with a partial tear in his left ACL. Initial reports indicated that he was going to be out for the season. He's going to be back in a month, so deep breaths, everyone. Vrsaljko has a partial tear in his left ACL. He will not need surgery. He is expected back. They're going to try to have him back for the second leg against Leicester. That's great news.
Yeah, really, really good. Missing him for the rest of the season would make the squad depth very iffy going forward, to say the least.
Yeah.
So having him back sooner rather than later will be good.
With Juanfran having slowed down a bit. I mean, Juanfran played pretty well in this game. He came on cold in the second minute and played a really big hand in Atleti's third goal. Juanfran kept up in this game, but he hasn't always kept up this season, which is why Vrsaljko not being out for the year is really important news.
Yeah, and he's a good deputy to have on the bench for situations like this, which will happen from time to time.
Yeah, so Sevilla started this game with a lot of the ball. Of course, we spoke on Ben Yedder's dive, which was great. And yeah. Really, I don't think Oblak even got a touch in the first 20 minutes. Atleti had a lot of possession early, but really just after that kind of ceded the ball to Sevilla and dared Sampaoli's men to break them down, and there wasn't really much of anything going on for them. Why do you think that was?
Well, I mean, it was a case of two very G'd up sides, I think. Not surprising, given the state of both the managers. But, I think they really did huff and puff, but Atleti were extremely resolute in defense and were both midfielders and defenders were stepping up to make interceptions and tackles and get the ball moving forward. And it really was a very good performance, despite not having a lot of the ball. They created a good amount of opportunities.
Yeah, you saw early on how good the midfield was in this game. It was Carrasco and Koke on the right-hand side and left-hand side with Gabby and Saul in the middle. And Atleti really gained control from there, even without having much of the ball, and that all culminated in a Godin special, the classic set-piece goal in the 37th minute. Sevilla were totally caught off guard by this, which surprised me. Griezmann took the free kick. I don't remember who won the foul, but Griezmann took the free kick, and they weren't expecting it. I think they were expecting Gabby or Koke to do it. But Griezmann took it. Godin was just unmarked. He's like not good with his head. Why would you mark him?
Yeah, probably one of the worst decisions in all of football is to not mark Diego Godin on a set piece. I mean, that's an awful idea.
Gee, I can't remember any big-headed goals he's scored in his career. Can you?
Yeah, no, I don't think I've ever seen anything. Like, definitely not from a set piece.
Maybe one to win a league? I can't really remember. But he brought back...
Not in a European Cup final.
Yeah. What are you doing, Sevilla? But yeah, Godin took this on his head really well. Lashed into the goal, 1-0. It's his third goal of the season. His second against a top four side at home in an afternoon game, which is a fact you didn't need to know, but I felt compelled to tell everyone on Twitter.
Yeah, it was a glorious atmosphere as well. Father's Day in
Spain. Yeah, it was Father's Day.
Yeah, really, really wonderful, lovely banners and such from the fans, and they were really up for it, and as they should.
Simeone,
this was a massive game.
Simeone remarked after the game that it was a lot like a Champions League game because of the atmosphere. And this is why Atleti fans, they are always there for the big games. They always get out, no matter what the team is doing, changing the badge, changing stadiums, they're still there to support him. And they really carried him through the early portion of this game. really carried him through when Sevilla started to get more of the ball. And it culminated with that goal toward the end of the first half. I was concerned, I'm not sure if you were as well, that Atleti were not going to keep up that energy. We'd seen it, especially against Barcelona, for one, another top four side, that Atletico tend to lose energy as the game goes along. Why do you think they were able to keep up the energy and intensity? Kind of a change from weeks past.
Yeah, I think they kept it up, but I think also in relation to Sevilla play a very similar sort of very hard pressing style that takes a lot of energy out of them. And I truly think it's a huge benefit to both teams that they both played Champions League midweek, so neither of them were particularly fresh for this match. So I think that played probably a pretty big part in this.
Yeah, it could have fooled me. Atleti looked like they'd had, you know, 2 weeks off.
Yeah, I mean, I was very impressed that they were able to keep it up for most of the game. And for me, I thought a lot of the players, it seemed to me for this game stuck out as one where the players have very much adapted to their roles within this team, even if it's not one particular player's best position or whatnot, as we've talked about a lot.
Yeah, and Simeone also remarked after the game that this is the line to follow in terms of the player performances and how they executed his plan. And that plan resulted in, well, not really a plan. It was more a moment of individual brilliance that doubled Atleti's lead on the hour. Antoine Griezmann with the free kick. Sensational.
Yeah.
This was amazing.
It was a rocket. Absolute rocket.
Thunder bastard.
Yes, smacked off the underside of the bar. I mean, truly, it had all the characteristics. You had the goalie desperately diving for it and missing heroically. It was wonderful.
You think Sergio Rico should have done a little better on that?
I think he could have, but I think also Griezmann had a very short run-up to it, and to get that much power on the ball in the way that he did, and he was, you know, I think he could have done better, but when you hit a ball like that and it smacks off the crossbar, I don't think you can be too critical.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, this was just a wonderful goal. It's his 14th league goal of the season, his 13th goal in all competitions since the start of 2017. We had Carlo Valladares on the pod a little while back after the Granada game, and we discussed whether this is the best form Griezmann has ever been in, and this further underscores my belief that it is. I think it does with you as well. And he was just everywhere, creating everything on Sunday. Set up Godin's goal, scored this one, and he led the counterattack that produced Koke's goal in the 77th minute.
Yeah, he was a part of everything. I mean, really, all three goals he had a bit of a hand in. And, you know, I really, every time I see him now, when his hair keeps getting longer, he just starts looking more and more like Diego Forlan of old.
Yeah,
that number seven. It's
very no coincidence. Nice. It's no coincidence they started scoring when he grew out his hair like Forlan.
Yeah, I know. I mean, they really are starting to look quite similar with the headband. I mean, I'm digging it.
They are. It's a little strange. So Koke finished finished the scoring with the third goal. Griezmann started the counter. Carrasco and Juanfran teamed up on the right. Juanfran tried to pull it back and cross to the middle. Sergio Rico deflected it, and Koke was just able to tap into an empty goal. It's his fifth goal of his career against Sevilla, and I think 14 games. It's a pretty good record.
Yeah, he hasn't scored a whole lot this season, and pretty much one of three players could have had their pick of that empty net. But, yeah, it was good. That killed the game at that point. They did score again, but, you know, that finished it for sure.
Yeah, off a defensive lapse, which, of course, Savic lost his position, but that's what we've come to expect from him this season.
As you might expect, I was a little bit happy that they scored that, you know, but just for personal reasons.
Yeah, kind of wanted the clean sheet. But yeah. On Koke, this was a great game for him, too. And since the turn of the year, he's played a lot better because Simeone has found, I think, a solution. He can still play him on the left, but or on the right, but he drifts a lot more toward the middle than he has in years past. He doesn't simply stay on the wing, which limits and stifles his creativity. He drifts a lot more toward the middle. He has a more freer role. Whenever Atleti countered, you could see him drift toward the middle. And when they track back and get into their shape in their 4-4-2, he would just stay on a wing and team up with the word player, Felipe. That was it. He would team up with Felipe down the left-hand side. So that's been a very nice tactical wrinkle to see, and it kind of is the best of both worlds. You don't worry so much about losing your solidity with a more natural winger and less natural defensive player on the wing, where when you put Koke in the center, and you still, when you counterattack, you get Koke at his best, where he flourishes when playing through the middle.
Yeah, it's truly very difficult not to love watching a player like Koke play. He's just so talented, and it's wonderful to see him sort of in this role that used to be his role, but it's been adapted more so he can fit and have a bigger role in what this team does going forward.
Yeah, and letting change formations in game a bit more than we're used to seeing. That they've gone, they didn't do a whole lot in this game, but more generally in the past couple weeks, they've shifted to 4-3-3 during games and then back to 4-4-2 based on the situation, based on certain players. And you've seen it's still a 4-4-2, but it's a much freer. For not just for Griezmann, but for Koke, for Carrasco, they have freer roles now. And Simeone has unlocked this door. He's finally found the key to unlock playing those three players in freer roles that they're more comfortable in while still keeping the shape.
Yeah, and for a lot of teams, that'd probably be a bit of an issue, but Atleti are such a disciplined side in terms of knowing what exactly Simeone wants them to do that they can really transition from 4-4-2 to 4-3-3 quite seamlessly, and it's very nice to watch during games because you can definitely notice the difference when they switch.
Yeah, and this was a problem for Atleti even earlier this season in switching formations and just giving players other than Griezmann room to roam about on the pitch. That was a problem even in December, but it's taken quite a bit of work for Simeone to make this team fit together after having to pull back the reins following the experiment with the more open team earlier this season.
Yeah, they found a nice happy medium, I think, between the two. And Saul has been impressive in the midfield role. He's kind of become a bit more both way in terms of being a box-to-box player, which I think you and I both agree is probably his best deployment.
Yeah, I wrote in my ratings that this is about as good a form as he's been in all season. He's been very consistent over the past month. I saw him track back to win a ball at the edge of his own box at one point on Sunday, and then he would get into the final third with a lot of pace and a lot of dribbling, as we've seen he can pull off. He can pull off those slick moves with the ball at his feet. That's where Saul is best at, and it's not kind of the role where he's kind of oscillating between the wing and the middle like Koke is. He's not. It's a little like Griezmann, but as a box-to-box midfielder, you're naturally are going to have that freer kind of role.
Yeah, and alongside Gabby, it's a really, really good partnership.
Yeah, Gabby just cleans up he does all the dirty work. He's 33, but he's not playing like it.
No, absolutely not. And for the last several years, he's been that way. He's an absolutely wonderful player.
Yep, El Capitan. Love him.
Oh, yes. He's fantastic.
So it finished 3-1, and Torres played at the end, which thrilled the fans. Of course, he tried to chip Sergio Rico to make it 4-0, and then Sergio Rico just chucked the ball down the pitch, and Sevilla scored. Happens. That happens.
Yeah, it does. I'm glad he's back on the field. I don't think when what happened to him happened, we thought he'd be back this soon.
Yeah, less than 3 weeks. Incredible. So yeah. It was great to see him out there.
Very happy for him.
Great to see him. So it finished 3-1. Atleti now 2 points behind Sevilla in third place and have the head-to-head advantage courtesy of the two-goal win. Open for business, Rob. How confident are you now that Atletico are the favorites to get third place?
Oh, man. I'm a lot more confident than I would have been just 2 or 3 weeks ago, honestly, as you might imagine. But Atleti still have European football, which is we'll take away from their league performances, and the league is not really their focus at this point, so long as they guarantee their Champions League spot. But I think they have a very good chance of doing it. Sevilla are a bit on a slide at the moment, and they'll keep dropping points, if not soon, but they will inevitably. So
yeah,
I think they have a very good chance.
They still have to go Sevilla. They still have to go to the Camp Nou and the Bernabeu.
Yeah, so that's going to be an issue for them.
Yeah, good luck with that. It's almost like a Bielsista's team just falls apart in the spring months. Who knew?
Yep. Second half of the season, you press hard for the whole season. You're a little bit dead on your feet.
Yeah, they also
Sevilla and Tottenham and Bilbao all over the place.
They still have to go to Valencia as well, which could be kind of tricky.
Yeah, because they've sort of got their shit together at long last.
I'd say Atletico now are the favorites for third place. I'm still not sure they'll get it though. But I think they have to be considered the favorites. They're certainly going to finish in the top four. That looks, if they beat Sociedad the week after international break, they come back, they play Malaga at La Rosaleda, then midweek they play Sociedad at home. If they beat Sociedad, they are pretty much guaranteed the top four. They have a 7-point cushion over both Villarreal and Real Sociedad now, just 2 points back of Sevilla. So they are at least pretty much confirmed right now for the top four. And yeah, they have to be considered the favorites for top three, even if I'm still not 100% that they're going to get it.
Yeah, definitely. They've certainly hit their stride as far as we know. And I mean, they will drop points, but so will those around them. And if they can capitalize on that, then they'll get it. And that'd be great not to have to play those play-in games, because those are awful.
Yeah. Two unnecessary games that we don't really know where Atletico would even play them.
Yes, or who it'd be against.
Yeah, as the stadium may not... likely won't be ready.
Yeah, who knows. Ugh. So the less of those we have, the better.
Yeah, so overall a very successful weekend, a very successful Father's Day, as you wrote, a Father's Day lesson for Sevilla.
Yeah, they got a bit of one.
Yeah, and now we move on to some news items, and we have a few of them.
It's been a packed week.
We talked about Versalco. The big one from last night was this broke during Simeone's interview with Onda Cero, El Transistor, which we'll talk about in a minute. But Atletico have apparently agreed to sign Alexander Lacazette. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. That wouldn't be bad.
Cool. Awesome. Lacazette's only averaging a goal a game in Ligue 1 this season. I'm not sure he is an elite striker. He's certainly in the next tier, though.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, he is really, really good. So this broke last night. Antonio Ruiz from Cadena Cope broke this report. He says Lacazette met with Atletico CEO Miguel Angel Gilmarin at the latter's home last month. I'm sorry, I'm literally reading what I wrote last night. Let me start that again. So... Antonio Ruiz, who is a pretty reliable Atleti reporter, did this up last night, literally around midnight Spanish time. He says that Lacazette met with Atletico CEO Miguel Angel Gilmarin at his home in Spain, and that is where Lacazette gave Atletico's primary stakeholder, Atletico's primary owner, the thumbs up, the verbal agreement. Lacazette has apparently already visited a stadium called Wanda. He was bowled over by what he saw there. And most importantly, Antoine Griezmann recommended him very highly to Atleti, to the club.
Yeah, I mean, he's a player that's been angling for a move away from Lyon for seemingly forever, as I wrote. I mean, it feels like 100 years, but he's definitely a very good player. I mean, he's shown it Champions League and Liga. In the Europa League this season, so
yeah,
certainly an impressive player.
The last couple of years, he's been linked with Arsenal. Last season, he was linked with a move to Atletico, didn't come off. Lyon will not negotiate for anything less than 40 million euros. I don't think Atletico will have too much of a problem paying 40 to 50 million. The problem will come, of course, in the transfer ban.
Yes, fun.
As it always is, yeah. Atleti are... increasingly confident that that ban is going to get overturned and they'll, along with Real Madrid, be able to sign players this summer. If it doesn't, then Atleti, if they want it badly enough, they can still acquire Lacazette. They just can't register him.
Yeah, I mean, it feels to me like you'd imagine they wouldn't be making these sort of advanced negotiations if they didn't have some sort of information that they thought it would be lifted.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That maybe they do have some information that, of course, only they are privy to.
Yes, exactly. They obviously couldn't release that at all. So
yeah, so we'll see what happens. Lacazette's been at Lyon his entire career. So he joined them at 12 years old, so it would be quite the day if he were to leave them. And he'd be a great fit, I think, at Atletico. It'd be like kind of the French connection would become the French triumvirate.
Yeah, it does make one wonder what would happen to Kevin Gamero if that does mean that maybe Cholo's gone off in a bit. But we don't know that. And, you know, it was also said that Antoine Griezmann had agreed personal terms with Manchester United. Now that seems like total BS. So we shall see.
And I want to talk about Griezmann in a minute because the rumors came back yesterday. Yeah, because he won't stop talking. But at any rate, I think if Atleti were to acquire Lacazette, Gamero would be a pretty nice option off the bench.
Yeah, definitely.
He'd be a very nice option
in terms of age,
but. And that's what Barcelona wanted him for, was to be the fourth striker. It was to be the backup to Luis Suarez.
Yeah, and I think he'd be very good in that role, especially as he gets older, and then you have Fernando Torres there as well. So.
Yeah, I think they're going to re-sign Torres. The reports today said that they are yesterday actually said that they have kicked off negotiations with Torres for another 1 year renewal. So I would bet Torres comes back. My question would be, what would happen with Angel Correa if the signing were to happen?
That would certainly be an issue for him in terms of getting minutes really at all up front.
I think Correa's minutes would be severely cut if Lacazette were to come this summer, and you'd have him, you'd have Griezmann, who's going to stay, you have Torres, and you have Gamero. So that doesn't really leave a whole lot of space for Correa unless you're going to convert him to a midfielder full-time, which I don't think they should.
No, I don't think, though. And unless you're switching to a formation which includes a second striker, then it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, fascinating times ahead. Now, Antoine Griezmann, back on the front pages of the Spanish papers today. He gave an interview to L'Equipe in France as he has gone on national team duty with Le Bleu. And he was asked about, of course, potentially leaving Atletico and joining a team like Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich. And he said, you know, who knows, basically. It's like every player's dream to join one of those clubs. But right now, I can't see myself joining. I'm happy at Atletico. I wouldn't leave them for PSG or Bayern or anywhere that has bad weather. Okay, so you're going to be shocked, Rob, at what AS and Mundo Deportivo decided to run with on their front pages this morning.
Let me guess, something along the lines of Antoine Griezmann demands to leave Atletico.
Just about. You're not far off. He said, all right. Griezmann doesn't close the door to Barca or Madrid. I'm like, oh my God.
It's not going to happen.
And then Mundo Deportivo, this was great. They have Dybala and Griezmann on their front page saying the trident plus one of these guys.
Yeah.
Because that's the solution to Barcelona's midfield problems there.
Barcelona ain't got enough money for both of those.
it's just
the truth. I mean, they're rich, but they're not that rich.
All right, kids, let's have a lesson on media literacy. So, yeah. Neymar said something pretty similar in a recent interview that Marca posted this morning. He was asked about the Premier League, and he said, yeah, I like to play there. Maybe someday I'll go. Very exact same situation, but the context is warped. The context is completely different. When talking about Neymar, it's like, oh, he might leave someday, but that's a few years down the road. When Griezmann says something like, you know, there are other teams out there. When Griezmann says something to that effect, it's like, oh my God, Griezmann's leaving tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hysterics.
It's a bias. Yeah, it's horrible.
And it's
so annoying. Yeah. I mean, it's been happening for months, and it's ridiculous.
Now, to be, I guess, fair, Griezmann does kind of lend himself to these headlines because he doesn't shut up.
Yeah, stop doing interviews, Antoine.
he needs to stop talking about other teams. I think we all like that. But he has also reaffirmed his commitment to Atleti multiple times. He renewed his contract last summer. He's staying this summer. He likely will not leave until next year. In the interim, he should probably stop talking about other teams, and the Spanish media needs to do better.
Yeah, but they certainly favor two clubs in particular, so.
Yeah, and it's clickbait. It sells papers.
Oh, yeah. But I think most of us at our site don't really think he's going anywhere.
No. So,
not this summer.
No, Simeone gave an interview to El Transistor, which is an Onda Cero program. He gave a really wide-ranging, in-depth interview on Monday night. said a lot of things, talking about how he prepares for games, saying you know, he could be in a movie theater and something comes up and he has to write it down, like for an upcoming match. He says how exhausted he is at the end of games and how he doesn't really sleep well until the following night. Juan Arango translated pretty much the entire interview. A friend of the pod, David Cartledge, also tweeted out some translated quotes. But the ones that struck me and will likely strike a lot of our listeners are the quotes about the Champions League and the quotes about the two lost finals, particularly the one in Milan last May. Cholo said how difficult it was, how the Athletic players had to pass by the Real Madrid players celebrating to get to the dressing room, describing how he had failed. His goal was to win the Champions League, and he did not achieve his goal. Whenever Atleti's players hear the Champions League anthem, you know, he feels pain, they feel pain. It said it killed him to see his children cry after losing the final, but it's their duty, their obligation to try again, and they're going to try again. It was pretty deep stuff.
It was extremely insightful, I thought.
Very wide-ranging, and he got pretty in-depth here.
Yeah, it was a super long interview as well. You don't really see coaches doing this too often.
No, you don't. And Simeone is a guy who, he's very emotional. He wears his heart on his sleeve. He also talked a bit about how Kevin Gamero came to the club. He called him, told him to come on down. Diego Costa was the first choice, but that if it wasn't him, it was going to be Gamero. He talked about that. He talked about a lot of stuff. So, listen to the interview, depending on how well you know Spanish. Listen to the interview. It's on Ondesero's website. We'll retweet the link in a little bit. But it's a lot of stuff. He also mentioned how he changes diapers still, and how he cares for his team, but also because he has a six-month-old. That was a fun quote.
Yeah.
That was a pretty funny
quote. He's a fascinating dude. And, I mean, really, and I said this in what I wrote, it for a lot of teams, losing the first final, the one in Lisbon, would have broken a team's spirit. But then to get them back to Milan and then have what happened, but then still have them have the capability to keep going and nearly go for the whole group stage unbeaten, it's a testament to his character and the team's character.
Yeah, he said pretty much every other team would have faltered. They would have fallen off after losing two finals in 3 years, but not Atletico. And no matter what happens in the Champions League this season, hopefully, of course, it's a win, but we don't know. No matter what happens this season, it's taken a lot of character for Atleti to get through that group, which was a tough group, and to make it to the last eight for the fourth year in a row. That takes guts. That takes a lot of character and a lot of pride in everyone.
Yeah, and I mean, if they make it to the final again, they're just such a strong team in terms of character and their attitude. And there's something, I don't know what it is, but there's that little feeling. I don't know, I'm feeling it, Jeremy. I don't know what it is.
I'm trying not to feel it, Rob. I'm trying to suppress the feeling. Balance. I'm trying to suppress the groove.
Okay, that's fine. Good. we can balance each other out then.
You are more of the optimist on the pod.
I know. I don't know why that is, but I'll take it.
I'm a skeptic by nature, so naturally cynical.
I'm liking it. I don't know what it is, but I'm feeling it.
It's a good dynamic. It really is.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
All right. So after this, we're going to have Gianluca Lia. Rob is going to exit stage right, and Gianluca is going to come on to talk about the women's team. A very exciting segment coming up after this. Yeah, it's different here in the States. It's very competitive here, but not as much for football. We have MLS here, of course, and I'm in Arizona, which is on the West Coast, and we have a team here that is trying to join Major League Soccer. They put in a bid a few months ago, so that may drive up competition in my state, which will be pretty interesting to see.
True. I follow MLS. It's my first league, to be honest. I support Toronto, so
oh, yeah.
I know what you're saying. But
yeah.
In the States, it's different, the competition, because as you said, the States, there are a lot of states, and kind of every state has its own sport, own team, so it depends. In your state, football may be, let's say, soccer, it's not the number one sport.
It's
but if you go somewhere else, maybe even Toronto, there's recently the competition about soccer has increased. So
yeah
it's a good point.
And Toronto was good last year. They almost very nearly won it all. So close last year.
That still hurts, to be honest.
Does it? Yeah.
Basically, at home, it's difficult.
Yeah, as of course we share that commonality in terms of a loss in the penalty shootout. We share that. For better or worse.
Was a huge blow last season as well.
Yeah, we're still mostly recovering. We're still kind of recovering a little bit. But as I'm sure you are, those wounds don't heal overnight.
Just... Of course, they get you stronger. The issue is that you lose against, in the case of Toronto, against a team who has never won it. So kind of
exactly
they are one step ahead of you. And in the case of Atletico, against the worst team possible. So
yeah, I laughed to stop myself from crying.
It's tough to digest through, and especially Atletico have lost another final recently, so you know,
but they are
trying to forget that final, and then this comes.
But they're playing better now, and they're trying again, and Atletico's women's team is also playing well. So let's dive in there, Gianluca. Atletico Femenino, let's talk the Feminas. I'm excited. I wanted to do this pod for a while. I thought the international break was a great time to do it. And yeah, I think it's hopefully we're gonna have a good conversation here about the team. You ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Let's do it. So last season, Atleti were third in the Liga Iberdrola, behind Athletic Bilbao, who won the league on 78 points. Barcelona, who finished second on 77 points. Atleti were 8 points behind Barcelona in second. What changed this summer? Because Atleti's ladies team is now a juggernaut.
True, I think the team hasn't changed a lot in its personnel. The staff remained the same, and that was important because the coach before last season had stated that this was a new project. Atletico had to expand its horizons in terms of women's football to become an elite team in Spain and where the level is increasing, and also in Europe. Well, last year they had their first experience, their first taste in the UEFA Champions League. This year they made some good acquisitions. They bought Marta Corredera from Arsenal, and I think that was a game changer because the team was already well engineered and well oiled, and I think that move increased the quality of the team and also gave an important signal that the team is doing the business. They are dealing with the players, are dealing with a serious organization behind them that it's backing them daily, and they really want success, not just for one season, but for a long-term project.
Sure. It's a lot of continuity, which is pretty similar to how the men's team kind of got on this run they've been on the last few years, which really started with the Copa del Rey win, then moved on to the league title and the Champions League final appearances. A lot of continuity in the squad. And this season, as I mentioned, Atleti are just a juggernaut. They're 4 points clear of Barcelona, atop the league on 60 points. They haven't lost yet. 19 wins, 3 draws through the first 22 games of a 30-game season. What has the style of play changed at all, or is it really just down to the continuity and the continued belief and maybe a high off winning the Copa de la Reina last year? What's been the biggest difference that you've seen?
The style of play hasn't changed a lot. Atletico always remained an offensive team, maybe a bit contradictory with their male counterpart because they play maybe more defensive sometimes, but Atletico remained offensive throughout the season. I think, as you underlined very well, the fact that they won the Copa de la Reina last season helped a lot because winning always helps winning, and to win an important trophy gets them to experience what does it mean to win something, what does it mean to be in the locker room before a final, what does it mean to the fans, to the staff, and so on. So I think it was they made it a point to win the title this season. Moreover, having no European appointments also helped. So week by week, the team is always prepared physically and mentally. Last season, it was difficult because in 3 days, they, for example, had to play away, 2 hours away in Spain, then they had to travel to Russia and then come back again to Madrid. So it was quite a bit of fatigue for them. And the team struggled in the final parts of the season. They collapsed literally, and they finished third, because at one point they were close to the first two, but then they collapsed mentally and physically. And they focused more on the cup, because it was their only realistic target, to be honest.
Right, and I it seems like, looking at the table, that being in Europe has hurt last year's champions, Athletic, as they're currently in fifth, 14 points off the top two, which the top two automatically qualify for the Champions League. Places 3 through 8 qualify for the Copa de la Reina. So Athletic are kind of mired in fifth. So that's an important point, that it, perhaps for an inexperienced team, having the extra commitment of the Champions League can hurt. And it looked like it hurt Atletico last season, but not so far this season. Let's talk about Sonia Bermudez. She's the star. She's leading the league in goals at 24. She joined the club in 2015, but after a few years at Barcelona, what has she meant to this team, and how does she score so many goals? She's averaging better than a goal a game.
Indeed, she is on the verge of becoming a Hall of Famer in Spanish football. I think the most important characteristic about her is her figure in the locker room. I think there are a lot of youth players who are coming up the ranks in the team, and being a 17-year-old, go to the locker room and you see Sonia Bermudez in front of you means already a lot. And then they train with her, and she gives tips and hints about what to do and what not to do. I think that strikes me a lot about her is that it's true that she always played with big teams, but she played previously in Spain, where football was not much played at such a high quality level, and maybe her records there, one could argue that she played against weak defensive lines and so on. But as time went by and football has increased in the level in Spain, she remained, actually, she became a better player. I think she continued to motivate herself, and that's what makes her a unique player. She scores a lot because...
Yes, she does.
In Spain, the teams are not very well positioned at the back, for example, but she is a very intelligent player, and she is very smart, and it's a pity that maybe she's not much younger, because I think because she would break a lot of records, especially when the national team is doing very well, and she could have led the team to major success.
Yeah, she's 32 years old, but she certainly doesn't play like it. Yeah, she's been in phenomenal form this season, definitely firing it, letting it to the top of the table. Who are some of the other key names from this team that have performed really well and have gotten the Femeninos to where they are?
Well, starting from the back, Gallardo is the number one goalkeeper in Spain at the moment, even of the national team. She has improved a lot from last year. Last year, she struggled a bit in terms of communication at the back. I think sometimes she lacked that leadership that was needed to safeguard the defense, and this year she improved a lot in it. A great way, and that is also underlined with the national team where she won the Algarve Cup as well. Going forward, for sure, in the midfield there is Amanda San Pedro, who alongside Sonia Bermudez is the best player in the team. She's a pure number 10. She can deliver, she can launch those through balls behind the defensive line towards Sonia Bermudez, and they connect even if they look at each other at one moment. One of the underrated players, I think, is Priscilla Boria Moreno, who is a striker as well. She scores a bit of goals as well, but I think she's a bit in the shadow of Bermudez, you know. When you have a legend alongside you playing the press and so on, they always mention the other one. But the work that Moreno does, sometimes even for Bermudez, he does a lot of dirty work. I think that's very important, and I think that's why Villacampo always puts her in the starting 11. Then there are also some new players which are going up, like Andrea Falcon, 19-year-old, and scored on her debut as well. That shows that Atletico are also working to improve their youth ranks and try to have a lot of their products in their starting 11 without spending a lot of money, because money is one of the key issues in women's football at the moment.
Yeah, and that kind of mirrors how the men's team operates. A big focus on the academy and bringing through players from there. Falcón was actually a name that I wanted to bring up, because it seems like she's been in great form since the start of the year. She's contributed to some big wins.
True, yes. She was already mentioned last year that she could have made the jump this season, but I think the fact that the team started to win from one side didn't help her, because the coach still needed to see if the team would collapse or not throughout the season or remain first. And then as things started to get more plain sailing for them, I think it was easy for her to make the jump and to make also her debut. And the team is really connecting very well at the moment, and I think any player which plays right now, it doesn't matter who he is, who she is, I think it fits, because this is a system which is really functioning well. And to be honest, it's a pity that they are not in Europe, because I think they would have done a good job this season. But on the other hand, the lack of European football helped as well. I'm really looking forward for Falcón for next season, because I think she can already be an important player also for the Spanish team, not the senior team, but also the youth selections, because she's not one of a kind, but almost there, because she's similar to Sonia Bermudez, and I think that is why Villacampo is often preferring her sometimes than other players up front.
Yeah. You mentioned how well this team is connecting. That would seem to be backed up by the fact that they won 11-0 last week against Tacoense in round 21. 11-0. That's incredible. And you also mentioned that this is really a team in an attacking setup, which differs a little bit from the men's team. What are they set up like tactically, and how focused are they on attack? They obviously have the talent for it, as we've seen.
Yes, they won 11-0 against Tacuense. Tacuense, to their defense, they are not one of the strongest team in the league, but I think one of the things that last year Atletico struggled with were the lack of goals sometimes, and also they used to keep the game tight until the final minute, and sometimes they also lost points against these kind of teams. So I think one thing that the coach implemented this season was to keep scoring no matter who's the opponent, because if you keep scoring, you maintain your sharpness at the game, you maintain your quality, you maintain your concentration, and at the end of the day also the goal difference helps. So that's an important factor. The team usually set up 4-3 on paper, but eventually they always become a 4-1-4-1 or a 4-2-3-1.
Interesting.
Sometimes Sonia Bermudez is alone up front with Borja Moreno behind her, or else up front in a duo partnership. When Falcón entered the team, they also tried the trio 4-3 as well, with the help of the flanks as well, because Marta Corredera is an offensive midfielder as well. She did a great job at Arsenal. She's carrying on that job with Atletico. So then it depends against the opponents as well. But for example, against Barcelona this season, and whoever is listening can go to YouTube and check the highlights. they played a massive game up front. Barcelona were shocked, I think. They expected that Atletico would do well, but it was a phenomenal game. And also they played it at the Vicente Calderon.
Yes, they did.
And the stadium, you know, the pitch is more wide there. So they winded their game. They stretched the defensive line of Barcelona, and they still continued to attack throughout the 90 minutes without any signals of fatigue or struggle. So I think that was not a win for Atletico, but a win for the physical team as well.
Yeah. They played that game at the Calderon against Barcelona. They're also playing Athletic at the Calderon in just a few weeks. Is that correct?
Yes, it will be their second game of the season there, and
that's a massive playing there statement
because want to attract more people there and to show. I think that's not. I think that is a show of strength from the club that the women's team is part of the family, it's part of the identity of Atletico Madrid, and
yeah,
you know, when you have a winning team, they deserve to play in such a stadium. So
especially in the stadium's last year, I think it's a pretty special gesture that they're going to get to play two games there. That's pretty great. So 8 games to go in the season. They are again top by 4 points with the most goals in the league, only 1 behind Barcelona on goal difference, but leading 60 points through 22 weeks, 56 for Barcelona. What does the run-in look like for this team, and how likely is it that they're going to win the title? It'll be their first title since they were reestablished in 2001.
Yes, the fixtures look very, let's say, comfortable on paper, because besides the one against Athletic Club, and even though I think they will win because they will play at home, and Athletic have been struggling this season. They have matches against lower teams, apart one against Valencia, which, if I'm not mistaken, they will play again at home. So that's already an advantage for the team. But I think at this point of the season, Atletico are unstoppable because they are very focused on winning the title, and they want to return to Europe as well. So, and yes, as you underlined, well, this would be their first title after the re-establishment and after last year's Copa de la Reina, and would be a phenomenal season for them because this was their target. Even though at the beginning of the season they did not actually say it in public that they wanted to win the league, especially following last year's collapse. But as time went by, they couldn't hide behind their justifying of last season.
Yeah, for some of our listeners who may not know, this is not the first Atletico women's team. Initially, the team was established in the late 90s, played for 3 seasons, won a league title in its first season, 1989-90, but was then disbanded and refounded, reestablished 10 years later before it became officially part of the club in 2005, started playing the first division in 2006. And this season is going to mark a 5th consecutive top 3 finish for Atleti's ladies. Second in 3 seasons that it will be in the top 2. And, of course, the top 2 gets you into the Women's Champions League, so it'd be a pretty special achievement. Speaking more generally, women's football, not just in Spain, but in general, not followed as closely as men's football. That said, there is still there's still a thirst for it. There's still a desire to cover it. What in your mind, as a women's football writer, what needs to be done to promote the women's game in Spain and abroad? What are some steps that can be taken?
Well, that's an important question. It depends how you, from which aspect you want to start. I think most of all, the important thing in women's football is money, because with money, the football can grow, the movement can become more attractive. I think women's football has increased in quality and people are watching it more, media are covering it more. and so the general audience have more platforms where to catch up with matches, as we saw earlier this month, where there was the Shibi Leafs Cup, the Algarve Cup, and so on. The fact that there are more tournaments worldwide also helps, because people in every corner of the world can go to the stadium and watch a women's game. The fact that the quality has increased, that helps to turn around the stereotype that maybe women's football is very weak, is very mediocre, it's not physical, which is not the case, because in some places it's very physical.
Right.
Personally, I've been to a lot of matches worldwide in women's football, and I think sometimes it's more physical than the men's game, so that helps in terms of quality. And then, obviously, there's the need of the requirement of media exposure, because media is the best tool that women's football may have. And if media covers more, let's say, neutral and more objective, not criticizing only, that helps a lot. Also, I think I'm very happy that, despite FIFA's recent turmoil, bladder and so on, they are still focusing on gender equality and are including more women, former players or so on, which also helps in the logistics and the schedule of competitions and how to market women's football, how to attract sponsors. And eventually, if men's sponsors start to sponsor major tournaments, that will help attracting people. Well, sometimes people may not watch women's football just because it is not shown on television or something else. But
right.
If FIFA continues to export its mark on women's tournaments, I think eventually that will help. I'm really, talking about Spain, I'm really happy that the interest has increased a lot in recent years. I think that's also because of the help of BN Sports, which are transmitting one game a week. The La Liga page of sometimes show matches on Facebook Live as well. So having the backing of La Liga is massive for them. And also teams sometimes do transmit their matches. For example, Barcelona always show their women's Champions League matches on YouTube, so also that helps a lot. And even the players, I think they are becoming aware that if they contribute through social media, they also engage with people. And I think women's football has a lot of potential, because taking, for example, the Major League Soccer, the Major League Soccer is a very relative young movement, so it is growing up in the era of modern technology and so on. So people, if they start watching it when the movement is growing, they may be more engaged with it, because they might have more knowledge about it rather than maybe other leagues which have already been established decades ago.
And yeah,
that may also help, because especially engaging with youth audience, because at the end of the day, that's the important thing, to create a base for the future.
So you kind of see the trajectory is on the rise, not just in Spain, but for competitions like the Women's Champions League. It's on the rise. It hasn't been as promoted and as noticeable as in the past, but it's definitely getting there now.
Exactly. Speaking about UEFA Women's Champions League, I think UEFA have done a brilliant job in transforming the former UEFA Women's Cup in this format, in the format of UEFA Women's Champions League, because there are more teams, teams from across all Europe, more revenue, more attraction, because the previous UEFA Women's Cup was a monopoly of few teams, and not much teams qualified for it. There was no coverage of the qualifications, for example. With the UEFA Women's Champions League, they have their own social media profiles. When there are the qualifiers, there are streams. UEFA does publish articles about them. So people can still engage throughout the summer about what is happening across Europe. Then at the end of the day, it is important that clubs have the backing of their own associations. And now for not in every in Europe, the associations have their own team, mainly because of financial issues. But I know that maybe some associations are still led by people not actually young, so they are not used to the idea that they have also to work about or fund something related to women's football, and that is something that needs to be addressed, and that is why it is there is the need of more fresh blood in the associations across Europe, including Malta, for example.
Yeah, it needs to be maybe the more progressive kind of people to get involved, the bigger it'll grow, and there's certainly hope for that. Last thing, several of Atletico's players won international honors a couple weeks back. What happened with the Algarve Cup? Spain won the final 1-0.
Yes, Spain won the Algarve Cup, in my opinion, in a surprising way, because to be honest, I did not expect them to win. But from their first match, they won against the former world champions, Japan. They showed really good football, especially the athletic players, and also the likes of Alexia Putellas, who plays with Barcelona. They played in a really disciplined manner. They were different side from the previous World Cup, where they were a bit disappointing, and I think during the tournament they felt a bit the pressure. One of the most important characteristics that I noticed was they played without pressure, and they played with the idea in their minds that they are the team to beat. They even if they lose, they want to be hard to beat, and I think that helped a lot, because they never really shown any signs of any collapse or something else. And in the final, they faced a strong team like Canada, which are far more experienced than Spain, far more experienced in Olympic tournaments, World Cups, and it is not strange for them to win any medals or to get to the podium. And I think if Spain would have lost, there would have been no shame in losing against Canada, but the fact that they won with a clean sheet, I think they showed that if not ready, they are almost ready to challenge for the top competitions. And that win also complemented the fact that the United States lost the She Believes Cup, and I think that they match, because Spain beat Canada 1-0. Spain have beaten one of the strongest teams in the world in women's football in Canada, while USA have lost against European teams, and that showed that the gap has really, really decreased between some teams that I think in the near future were going to assist to some important tournaments, and that eventually it's a win-win situation for men's football, because that will engage with the general audience, and I think at the end of the day, that's the women's football lovers, that's what they want.
Yeah, and great for Spain. Always good to get a trophy, especially a surprise one, against the team as strong as Canada. And yeah, the competition is getting better, listeners. So stay tuned in to the women's game. Gianluca here gives us monthly updates on how Atleti's ladies are doing, and they're closing in on the title. So now's the time to pay attention if you haven't been. So very exciting stuff. Gianluca, thank you so much for hopping on the program today. Really, really appreciate it. It's been great talking to you.
It's a pleasure for me, and I appreciate your invitation, because talking about women's soccer, it's really important for me, because it helps me to expose the movement, and also to speak with other people, and maybe also engage with new audience in women's football, who knows.
No, hopefully we'll get to have you on again soon, man.
It would be a pleasure.
Yep. Thanks so much. We'll talk later.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Thus concludes this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat. I'd like to thank my guests, Rob Walker and Gianluca Lia, for stopping by the program today. Remember, you can listen to all new and archived episodes of Colt Gennaro Chat on iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, Google Play, and TuneIn. You can also like Into the Calderon on Facebook. Follow the blog on Twitter at Into the Calderon. You can follow me personally at JB Baron. Follow Rob at RWalk03 and Gianluca at Gianlia. That's G-I-A-N-L-I-A 96. As ever, thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time. Adios.